driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Hoodle, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the west side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three.
No, it's
good.
She got it.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
And live from the campus of Illinois State University, this is the Red Zone. Good evening, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us here on this Thursday night in Bloomington Normal. I'm Anthony Ferretti. I'm joined alongside my two awesome co-hosts and producers, Scott Rosala and Joey Dwyer. And fellas, another Thursday.
Another Thursday in the books. It feels good. I'm ready to go. I've been looking forward to it all week. It's been, I don't know about you boys, but it's been a long week.
You know what, Joey? I found a trend that kind of comes on every single week. You say that every single week. So the real question is, has it been a long week, or are you just
okay, lazy? I'm going to say comparably, it has not been a long week to all my other weeks. I just think that my weeks are always long. I always look forward to doing this show, and I always look forward to being down here at the station. But you know, class and me just don't get along so well.
How's your schedule looking for this semester?
I got all my classes Tuesday, Thursday, which really? Is nice.
Yeah,
except
that's the thing off? Being a comm major, like all your classes
all
are Tuesday, Thursday,
and it's really nice.
I beg
it's,
to differ that
it's really nice, except for the fact that I go Tuesdays. I go 11 to 8. Luckily, Freddie and I, we've got a. Tom LaMonica's Com 275, so that's cool. And we talked to
Jay Blunk,
Executive Vice President of the Blackhawks, so we can use some of our newfound knowledge when we talk to Joey Schmierman a little later. But, yeah, it's been all right.
I'm not going to lie. Every semester, I've had Monday night classes.
Really?
And it's been, yes, it's been tough. But, you know, shout out Jim G. I've had him on, and he is one of one of my favorite professors I've had, just because it's a broadcast performance class, and it's so cool. I've learned a lot from him, and I don't know, it's Monday night, and the Monday nights are always a struggle because like you're done with the weekend, you get on, it's late, but
yeah,
I don't know, I enjoy it.
Yeah, and I feel like the weather too has a lot to do with it being a long week as well. And I saw this one meme someone posted of like it was the one of the Jackie Chan movies of Karate Kid, and it was with it was a young Jane Smith, and he was telling him, hey, put your jacket on, take your jacket back off. And the meme was like, that perfectly describes Illinois weather.
Yeah, no, that 100%. The weather has been, because it looks, and it's deceiving, because you go outside, you see the sun shining
yes.
through your window. You're like,
yes.
Oh my God, maybe it's going to be a warm day. You don't check your phone, don't really look.
Yep.
I made the mistake. I came out with like a jean jacket, t-shirt, you know, jeans, walked on out, and I was freezing. So, you know what? It's nice and warm in here, and I am completely ready to start talking a little bit of Illinois State basketball.
I think so. It is pretty warm. So, yeah, we're going to dive right into it, talk about some Redbird men's basketball, and sad to say, nothing has really changed since the last time we talked about them last week. They took on the Loyola Ramblers last night at Gentile Arena, and they lost that game. And I think a big trend that's facing this team is that they can start a game pretty strong and take a lead in the halftime, but then they can't finish the game.
And I think that speaks a lot to the lack of bench depth that this team has. We've talked about it. We got to talk to some of the guys, and they've got a couple pretty good players in the starting five. Zach Copeland obviously is very good, and then they've got a nice supporting cast around him. But after that, when you get to the bench, there's not a whole lot, and that's kind of what separates this Redbirds team from Redbirds teams of the past. Is Dan Moeller's teams the past couple of years have had really good benches, and so coming into this year, it's not working out quite as well for them. So when any of these starting five get in foul trouble, they're really scraping the bottom of the barrel in terms of guys that they can put out on the court.
Yeah, Joe, you said it perfectly. There's a reason why this team only has 8 wins on the year. and they have struggled. And there's a main question that we keep coming up. Last time on the show, they had five games left. We still were playing Valpo. We were playing Loyola Chicago. We look at those two games. They were losses. They lost 65-62 to Valparaiso at home. Then they went on the road, took on Loyola, and that was an 84-69 loss. I had high hopes going into these last five games. I said, hey, you know what? It's been a struggle of a season, but the thing is, we're coming out here. We have five games left. If we can build some momentum and get these wins kind of going into Arch Madness, you know, maybe you can kind of make a run. We've seen that a lot with a lot of tournament teams here. The thing is that struggling is they're just not getting it done. They're still losing. Joey, you said it perfectly. They don't have depth. And not only do they not have depth on the bench, they don't have, you know, starters that are taking over the game besides Zach Copeland. And to be honest, Zach Copeland, he could be better. He could be better. And there's players on this team that could be better, and we saw a lot of potential out of them in the beginning of the season that they just have not shown. And the thing is, the major question that I think is being raised is it the coaching or is it the players?
And I think, see, that's tough because you have to look at – I take last year as a case study. The team underperformed with a great – top three, like we know,
yeah, Fain, Evans, and Yarbrough,
and that was a great top three, and they had a pretty good supporting cast. So then I think you can look at that instance and you can say, okay, maybe they weren't coached the best because you have all this talent, but it's obviously not being used well, plus off the court issues that we've talked about. But this year I really don't think the talent is there. I think there are a couple guys who we really thought were going to come in, all the guys who couldn't play last year because of NCAA transfer regulations coming in. I thought Dan Moeller thought that those were the guys, the next up, who have just fallen flat.
But the thing is, the reason why I'm going to disagree with that is how can you say the talent's not there? When this was the beginning of the season, we're beating teams like Belmont. We're starting out 2-0. We're saying this is going to be an unbelievable season. We had J.C. Hillsman come in here. He was on the show. He talked to us about how well the team was doing, how upbeat they were in the locker room. They came in here. He talked about that. And now we're kind of looking at it like, you know, this is just a horrible team. There's no bench. There's no, like... So that's what I don't understand, and that's why you kind of got to look at both sides here, because they do have some talent, and they have some young talent as well. You look at DJ Horn. He's a freshman coming in here. He's a true point guard.
And Antonio Reeves as well. And I Antonio think that Reeves. Freshman duo really could help us out in the long run.
It is, and because we do have a bright future. The question is Dan Moeller the man to back this bright future?
I don't think that the Redbirds will move on from Dan Moeller.
He's just a fan favorite.
Yeah, he's a fan favorite. He's done so much for the program.
His jersey's up in the rafters.
And exactly. And Steve Cease, our faculty advisor, was tweeting about it, talking about how we've been so spoiled as Redbird fans over Dan Moeller's tenure. And we are unstoppable at home. And so one down year I don't think is going to put his job in too much jeopardy. I'm just afraid that because you guys were talking about the young talent, the two freshmen, we've got Ray Adowu, who's a sophomore, coming up, Taylor Bruninga, he's a redshirt sophomore. But so there is some young talent on this team. It's just, can they rally behind Dan Moeller even after a bad season? So I think next season will really show whether it's the coaching or whether it's the roster and lack of production there.
So are you giving him one more year? Are you giving it one more shot?
If they come out next year,
let's say they come out next year and they have a season like we're seeing right now, is that it? Is that time to pull the plug?
I think again, it depends on the roster. I think what separates college coaches from any other is their ability to recruit. And so I think if Dan Moeller can recruit a good class to come in and start building this franchise again, even if there is a down year, even if we do have a down year and it's another year like this where we get three or four conference wins. If we have a good young core that's going to start building, I think you're going to see Dan Moeller stick around. But if we get more guys who are transfer juniors, transfer seniors who aren't producing, then it's time to reevaluate and think maybe the program has to take a step in a different direction.
Yeah, I would definitely think so as well. And maybe even with the coaching, we saw even before we came in here, they had a really defensive-minded coach. Luke Yalich, I believe is his name, and he really changed this team around, getting it defensively, and then he left to go to Michigan, and then after that we kind of deteriorated. But I would agree with you that if we can really rally around, you know, play team basketball, play Redbird basketball, then I think we can make for an exciting season.
We saw a lot of team basketball early in this season.
We were so excited. Yeah, we had a lot of potential.
We were so excited about this team, and it's just kind of fallen away a little bit. And
I think the thing is that it's a down year. All college basketball teams go through, unless you're obviously like a Kentucky or one of the main schools. All schools have a down year. It's just what happens with when you lose your seniors, you lose your core guys. And I think we've been so close for so many years to make a run in the Arch Madness, and we've been let down so many times that we're itching for it. So I think that's why it's so, like, it hurts a little bit more to just have to wait another year, especially when there's not – we don't see a whole lot of potential right now. But I think, you know, knowing this team and knowing Illinois State, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful within the next couple of years that they can turn it around. And I'm still hopeful for this year. We saw Bradley do it last year. Bradley was not a very good regular season team last year. They ended up winning the Arch Madness. Obviously, we've never seen a team go from Thursday to Sunday, and it's very, very, very highly unlikely. But anything can happen in March, anything.
And so talking about March, let's take a look at the last three games that we've got coming up. We were joking about it before the show, the fact that the Drake ISU game this Saturday, it's at home.
50-50.
It's 50-50, which we all think is ridiculous because – I don't see a way that
I think it's because it's at home,
and that makes sense.
Redbird Arena gets exactly, and it gets with any college sport having that home court advantage is crucial.
And then after that Drake game, they've got Bradley, who's been up and down this year. They're what, fourth or fifth in the Valley right now?
Yeah, I think they're right in the middle, but it's a big game for them because out of all the rivals in the Missouri Valley, this is the one that they dislike the most. And when they can get Redbird Arena rocking and they score that first point, the confetti goes everywhere. And RSO is trying to get a bunch of foam fingers going and break the record. So if they can really get that crowd going and the Birds can feed off that, they can really get something going.
And then the last game we got, I'm actually going to this game. I'm really excited about it.
It's in Evansville,
It's
too.
At Evansville. And so I'm making the trip. A couple of buddies, we're going down because we have some friends who go to Evansville. So we're all going to be there. I'm excited to cheer on the Birds down there, but that's a game, and that I think that is one of the few bright spots I see going into Arch Madness is unless something absolutely catastrophic happens, we should be going in on a win.
Hopefully.
Unless something absolutely atrocious happens.
Like, no, it's injuries.
I mean, we are winless on the road, so that's a little scary. However, Evansville is winless, period. So I think that if the Birds can go in with a win, maybe get that Thursday win and build up some momentum, because even if they don't go that far, it'd be great for these young guys on this roster to have some taste of success at Arch Madness. So when they're going forward,
Thursday means the most.
It's like you've been there before.
It means a lot.
Yeah, I would say so. And as we sort of wrap things up, as we mentioned, the Birds are going to take on the Drake Bulldogs this Saturday at Redbird Arena for Senior Day. We will have a live broadcast of that game starting at 3:20 here on 103.3 WZND. That's all for our basketball coverage, but when we come back, we're going to sit down with Joel Dernford of Redbird Men's Golf. You're listening to The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. I'm Anthony Freddy. I'm joined along with Joey Dwyer and Joel Dernford in the studio with us from Redbird Men's Golf. Joel, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So you are a senior on the men's golf team. I guess to start off, how's your day been today? Has it been pretty busy or was it a pretty light day?
Today was one of my busier days. Workouts in the morning, three classes during the day, practice as well, and this is meant to be a quieter time for us as well because it's cold outside. So, yeah, it's actually nice to have a little bit of an easier day.
And you mentioned your workouts a little bit. Last time you came in here last semester, you had a bunch of stuff on your wrist from an injury. Are you still rehabbing that at all, or are you at full strength?
I'm at full strength now. I went through the rehab process and got everything strong again over the break when I went back home, and, back fully fit now.
And that could probably factor in a little bit to your performance that you had earlier this week in Alabama. A nice performance for the whole team and you individually. So early on in the spring season, how are you guys feeling coming off a couple good performances, setting yourself up for the rest of the season?
It's always a little hard to judge exactly what sort of stage we're at this early in the semester with us not being able to get outside as often, obviously, with the weather and a lot of our practices indoors, and it's just not the greatest preparation to get outside, but that's what we have as a northern school. We've We played okay in Alabama. It's our season starter. It was nice just to get some rounds on the board, get out in some nice weather for a little bit. Even prior to that, we went down and played against the University of Illinois as a bit of a heads-up match a couple of weeks ago. And, yeah, it's just nice to get outside, get the season rolling, and, yeah, looking forward to what's coming up.
And you mentioned that it's been a bit of cold weather here in Illinois, as it usually is, and you guys got to practice indoors. So how nice is it that you get to go just to some warmer places to play golf for, like, 4 days?
Oh, it's huge. You can only do so much indoors, and I mean, we're set up really well here as far as the simulators and everything that we've got indoors, but nothing simulates being able to hit off grass, obviously, and it's nice just to get those few days down there to get a bit of touchback and, yeah, get started.
So you talk a little bit about the simulators you guys got indoors, and I've always wondered how you guys are able to practice when we've got, you know, 6 inches of snow and it's 10 degrees outside, because obviously you're not going up and hitting the course. So are the simulators kind of like what you see when you go to, like, golf shops, or are you a little more high-tech than that?
Very similar to what you'd see in a golf shop. So we've got two bays set up in Horton Fieldhouse, and we can play full-on rounds of golf with them as realistic as you can get. All the technology in the world as far as cameras and stuff that we can actually do technique and sort of check out what we're doing. So as far as a feedback point of view, it's really good for us, and it's as close as you'll ever get to, you know, playing in the snow and being able to actually hit inside. So it's really good for us.
And so looking ahead at your schedule just a little bit, as we continue to talk about the conditions, you've got two more Southern travels, I guess. You're going to Florida and then Alabama before you do anything in the Midwest. Does the travel take a toll on the team at all? Because I don't know of any other sports teams that do so much traveling before you get to play even close to home. So does that take a toll on the team at all, or is it more of like a bonding experience for all you guys to go down and hang out in Florida for 3 days?
Yeah, it is a bit of both. It probably has more of a impact on probably schoolwork more than anything. I mean, we're on the road for anywhere from 4 to sometimes 6 days in a row, and that's a hell of a lot of school to miss like in a row, especially being a senior this year. It does take a bit of a toll as far as classes are concerned, missing lectures, that kind of stuff. I mean, there's been times that we get back at, you know, 3:30 in the morning, even on a Tuesday, which is our normal day for coming back, and, yeah, trying to gear up and go for classes the next day can be a little interesting. But we do really well as far as preparation before we leave, trying to get all of our work done, trying to get prepared so that our sole focus when we get there is actually to be able to play in the tournament. So having the athletic stud center to be able to set up a lot of that work for us is invaluable. It's awesome. So.
And I've got to applaud you guys just for the work that you guys have been doing, not only being an athlete, but balancing being a student athlete as well. And that student part, as we mentioned, is especially important. And being able just to balance that, you guys are practically on the road probably more than you're on campus, is insane. But when you guys are on the road, like taking the bus or you're flying, what do you guys do to pass the time? Is there like maybe games you play, or do you got like a go-to playlist you do to like get yourself in the mode?
A lot of us try and do as much work as we can in the bus, like schoolwork, trying to get on top of as much as we can. Some of us have got our phones set up that we're playing games against each other or just on the road. Other than that, I mean, most of this semester we're flying until we sort of come back to the Midwest and sort of trying to, I don't know, we get most of our meals done while we're in the airports, those kind of things. But we don't have a huge amount of time as far as travel in airports, that kind of stuff. Coach does really well as far as the scheduling's concerned, and yeah.
And when you're on the road and going to these tournaments, what is the atmosphere like competing when you've got a bunch of other schools, or even when you're just going against the U of I and you're in a course that may not be familiar? What's the focus got to be like to make sure that you're golfing at your best?
You try and keep it as normal as possible, I guess. I mean, most of us have played 4 years worth of high school and however many years of college that we've been here. So most of us are fairly used to the competition side of things. I was only talking about it with Coach yesterday, how he's had players in the past that would go to regionals and come up against, you know, some of the best guys in the world as far as the amateur ranks are concerned. And like, they've sort of been in a bit of a fan state sort of thing, like, oh my God, there's such and such here, like he's hitting on the range next to me and sort of in stardom almost. So you sort of try and keep as much in perspective as possible, knowing that like you're still competing against these guys that you've sort of idolized as well as tried to compete against. So it's good as far as like you can push yourself against the best guys in, well, for me in America, because we don't get to sort of play against a lot of the Americans as being an international student and sort of see a lot of the competition that you never get to see again. So.
And you're a senior. You're talking about all this good competition. Are there any plans for golfing professionally once you graduate from ISU?
Up until this year, it was. I've actually had a big shift as far as what future plans are going to look like for me. I've actually dove pretty deep into the studies this semester and really taken a shine to it. And I mean, I've had a bit of a horror run with injuries last sort of. Or 10 years, to be honest, and it's just starting to sort of take its toll. And now the fact that I've got another interest as far as, I mean, I'm looking at strength and conditioning is sort of my area of focus. I've got an internship set up now and sort of going to see where that takes me. And so I've sort of shifted the focus a little bit. I certainly haven't disregarded the golf altogether, that's for sure, but it's going to want to be a pretty special semester to sort of push the professional ranks after.
And I'm sure you'd be an absolutely mean competitor in a, like, you know, like a work golf classic or something.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, I'm available for sure.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Even though you might not be playing competitively, I'm sure you know might want to get, you know, some of your friends or family together, you know, just, you know, play some 18 holes.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I'll certainly never lose a competitive edge. I've always been fairly competitive, but now it's sort of, I'm just sort of shifting it to a different area, I guess. I'll still go back home and still be involved with the golf club that I was when I go back home, so I'm still going to have a lot of involvement with it.
And shifting gears a little bit, for those of you listening, if you can't tell already, Joel is very Australian, and we just wanted to touch a little bit with you on, obviously, over the past couple months, these fires that have been running rampant throughout the country, and how has that affected your life, especially being here most of the time and not being back with all the people that you grew up with?
I mean, it's devastating. I was home for the four-week stretch between semesters, and most of the fires were sort of happening while I was home, and to actually get the first-hand experience of what a lot of it looked like, it was devastating. I mean, you look at some of the statistics of how much area it actually covered compared to, you know, other major ones that happened, you know, in years past in other places around the world, and it tops all of them by an absolute mile. The sheer area that it covered was unbelievable, and to see like so many people around the world being so generous with their time, money, etc., was amazing to see. Sort of that a lot of the fires were just being put out as I was leaving back to America, and I fly through Sydney personally to get from Australia to America. I do the 17-hour flight from Sydney to Dallas, and you couldn't see anything in Sydney. You're taking off in a plane and barely seeing out the window. Like, it's just incredible.
And the way that the 24-hour news cycle works, it's kind of fallen out of focus as far as major networks reporting on it. How have the efforts been successful? Is it slowing down as far as the spreading of the fire goes?
Yeah, so I'd say it was about 2 weeks after I got back into America. It was probably late January by the time that a lot of the fires were put out. We were actually quite fortunate to get quite a lot of rain, and I mean, eventually turned into floods. So we're going from one disaster to another, but it's they all got put out. I mean, the sheer devastation is obviously going to leave a mark on it for a long time to come. But it was good to see that everything was put under control. So.
Yeah, and I also like that there's a lot of relief efforts to try and get things going. That's always a positive when there's a big catastrophic event like that. And, you know, some people don't realize, you know, how fortunate they are because of an event that catastrophic. So just to pitch in anything that they can and help out, I think is, you know, just amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was efforts, like I said, from all around the world, from all different sources that really didn't even have anything to do with Australia or what was happening. I mean, there was a lot of Americans, a lot of celebrities that go that have been over there and have seen the devastation. It was like, here's a money amount, like, do with it what you wish sort of thing. So it was really good as far as the appeal went and trying to relieve the devastation.
And so when you graduate this upcoming spring, are you planning on going back, or are you going to stay here in the States?
We'll go back. So at the moment, we're hoping we're going to win conference. I think we've got a very good chance of doing that this year, and hopefully go to regionals, which runs through middle to late May. I've booked my flights for after regionals, just as a precautionary, but if I've got to rebook my flights because we've made it to nationals, then I'm going to be extremely happy.
And that would not
yeah,
be
no
a bad
problem.
No,
yeah.
Not at all. Parents would be happy to pay for the extra flights if that's the case. So.
And just to close things out, because we're running out of time a little bit, we were talking in the office, and Scott over there, who's not in the interview right now, but Scott thinks he's the best at every sport in the entire world.
Oh, boy.
And he was talking some smack about your putt-putt game.
Yeah.
Seeing if Scott says he could give you a run for your money as far as mini golf goes.
Okay.
So I just wanted to know if you've gotten any experience in the putt-putt game, and are you as good on the fake turf with the clowns and the pinwheels as you are on the actual course?
Hey, we can always put it to the test. I'm always down for the challenge. So
Scott looks like he's ready to go.
I'm down for that anytime.
Have you played mini golf before, I take it?
I have, yeah. It's a good date option. I
was gonna say that's gotta be great if you're taking somebody on a first date. You're going you're shooting 12 under par on the mini golf course. That's gotta be impressive.
I think I go a little bit easier, to be honest.
I bet all those par ones and par twos. Yeah,
exactly. Well, Joel, thank you so much for coming on. You guys are heading to Hoey in the Hills, Florida. I don't know if I said that quite right. Perfect. That's going to be March 14th, so you got a little time off to relax and enjoy at least a little bit of your spring break before you do that. But again, thank you so much for coming on, and we wish you all the best moving forward.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Gus.
Well, that will just about wrap it up. We will take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with our news and sports guests here. Keep it here. You're listening to The Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Thank you, Joe, for that. And before we dive into some hockey talk, we should just take a minute to just recap about Joel Dernford and what he had to say on the show. I think he was a really distinguished individual. I think the future is bright for him, and I like that he's really optimistic. You know, when he said he was booking his flight back, like, hey, I'm going to book it for regionals in case, and then even just to bring up, you know, back home too.
I think it's really cool to hear an inside voice, especially live and in person, about what's going on over there, because obviously you see on the news, you see like a little bit of it, and there you see how important it is and how many animals are dying in this, you know, mass thing, this crucial thing. And to hear from someone that actually is from Australia and is saying, you know, that they grew up not too far from the fires and was giving his kind of take on it, I think that's very meaningful, and I think it's really cool.
And if you want to help out the whole situation in Australia, you can go to redcross.org.au and donate to the cause, because the rescue efforts have been very successful. They've put out most of the fires, and it's an awful situation that's going on, but like Joel said, they're really getting it under control.
Yeah, and I think that it's crazy how much the world comes together in a horrific moment like that. And he was even saying it wasn't just America, it was all around the world. Countries were coming in and helping and coming to their rescue. And that's one thing that I think is, it's unbelievable to me to see everybody just come together and really take care of something that's pretty, you know, crazy and pretty big. Moving on to a pretty kind of lighten the topic a little bit here. I want to talk about what Joel was wearing. And I think,
oh my goodness,
the apparel, the athletic apparel is so slick.
And
it is so
not
slick.
It's amazing.
And
yeah.
Joel is already, if you've ever seen him in person, undeniably a good looking dude.
Yep.
He is a good looking dude. So he does not need to come out here with all this drip. But the ISU apparel, he just came out looking so fresh.
And the golfers and the baseball players, because they're playing in the warm weather right now, so they're coming with the tan.
He just got back from Alabama, so he's just unreal.
Yeah, they always get some nice polos or sweatshirts, and they always hook them up with those nice, I think Nike red shoes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, shout out the Nike red shoes because Sarah Bonnet got me a pair of those bad boys, and I walk around.
That's big.
They're pretty sweet, and they're comfortable, too. You wouldn't think so because Nike, you know, they're free runners. I don't know about them, but... Yeah. But they're pretty cool.
Freddie's flexing his free runners. Yeah. He's like, hey, check it out. They're not red, but.
Can we? I want to talk about something because every time something happens in this studio, Joey Dwyer makes a point to tell you. If you listened early on in the show, I had frosted tips or whatever you want to call them.
It was not a good look.
Joey made sure to comment on every hairstyle, everything I was wearing. So I just want to point out a little picture for you about what Joey looks like right now.
Oh boy!
So about 2 minutes ago, Joey's
it's during
Joey had
during,
a leaky faucet.
During
Joe
Spearman's newscast, I just wiped my nose really quick, and my hand's covered in blood.
Yeah, so right now I'm getting a good look at Joey. He's got his left nostril has a little bit of a tissue shoved into it. It's a good look. It actually makes you look more professional.
I was going to say, I thought Joe wants to talk about hockey, so I thought what better way
to have a
to
bloody
talk
nose.
About hockey
I
than to get
it.
A bloody nose, shove a little thing up there, and get it going. So
I got
to...
Yeah, I got to say, you should see the other guy. I mean, if you think Joey, yeah, see the other guy.
The other guy being the dry atmosphere in the studio.
You know what? That's a good transition. I'm ready, actually, to talk a little NHL hockey. And Joe Schmierman is here, our news and sports reporter. And you have a lot. You have been going over this, and you're a big Hawks fan. So I would love to hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah, I am a big Hawks fan. I've been for years, and it's crazy to just see, you know, what teams are being brought in. You know, back when they won the Stanley Cup in 2010, you know, they have a stacked team. You got Dustin Byfuglien, Andrew Ladd, Marian Hossa, Ben Eager. You know, the list goes on. But, you know, as years go by, you see these teams that have been low in the standings start to make an appearance. You know, the Edmonton Oilers, they get McDavid. The Toronto Maple Leafs, they get Austin Matthews. And look, they're back in the standings. You know, Edmonton Oilers, like I said, you know, they dropped the playoff appearance last year, and now they're making their way back in, and now McDavid's hurt, and now, you know, everything, you know, goes to play. But here's the thing. There's going to be teams that are going to come in, and they're going to do their job, and they're going to make their way back in the standings. And on the Blackhawks, on the other hand, which, you know, very disappointing, bad loss last night to the Rangers, just a lack of energy. I really think it's definitely time to start thinking of what they're going to do. You know, coaching-wise, general manager-wise, Stan Bowman, some of the moves that he's been making hasn't been the greatest, in my opinion. And I really like to see what I think is going to happen. You know, Jeremy Colleton, for what I'm thinking is, he's a very good development coach, and that's like with the Rockford Ice Hogs in the AHL, and the goal there is to develop all these players to get them ready for the NHL, but I feel like he's still playing that role. So he's here in the NHL coaching Kane, Taze, and these guys, you know, they know what it takes to win. They won three cups together, and this sort of new, you know, we want rookies to play. We want them to get, you know, get time. Kubalik, you know, killing it lately. Has over 20 goals this season. He's a rookie, and he's doing great. And he had a couple goals last night in a loss. And what do you think, you know?
I like how you touched up on the Edmonton Oilers. I like how you touched up on Connor McDavid. But if you look at the history of the Oilers, I mean, even they had some HBO shows called Oil Change. And I just remember dating all the way back when I was a kid and I was watching these things. They have had their struggles. So I know I get that they're first in the Pacific Division right now. They're 32-21. But they have had a lot of struggles. And you mentioned Connor McDavid was injured. That's a big loss to them. I think they're going to be just fine. I don't think they finished first in their division, though. It's pretty tough. They got the Canucks, who another team. They were kind of struggling for years. They gave the Hawks, before they were struggling, they were always giving the Hawks a hard time. And that's just with any franchise, especially in hockey, is you're going to see it fluctuate. And I think with the Blackhawks, they have those core guys that are giving us that hope. I mean, with the playoff hope, we're like, oh, you know, maybe they're going to bounce back. But I just don't think they have the depth. And the reason I say that is because, yes, they have the core guys, but when you get this late into the season, you know, in the NHL and hockey, it's a grind. This isn't like the NBA. It's not like any other sport. And I think that now that we're getting tested here, that's why you're going to start to see them fall off.
And I'm just going to say, because I know this is going to be a pretty Hawks-centric talk, and so, but while we're still on the Oilers, I just want to say, yeah, they might be playing all right now, but let's not let them off the hook for drafting Nail Yakupov first overall.
Ooh,
all right? because that's the biggest bad draft bust in NHL history.
Yeah.
But going back to the Hawks, we were all talking about it earlier because we knew Joe was going to talk about it on the show. So I was just kind of talking shop with some of the boys here and Leo Stoddard, one of the other guys in the office. And I am just so unimpressed by the job Jeremy Colleton has done. I think that there are clear problems that, like, and obviously I'm going to say this, and then some people are going to roll their eyes, but, like, as a fan, I can see some of the problems that the Hawks have, you know? Like, we can't play defense to save our lives. No. And that's it. We can't play zone. We can't play man. So what are we left to do? And that's a coaching problem. That's not, like, sure, our defensive roster isn't the best, but you have to be able to find a way to be able to play defense effectively, and they just have not been able to do that, and so they can't close games.
And I'm going to disagree. I am going to disagree heavily. I don't think it's 100% a coaching problem. When you make it to the NHL, those players are at the elite tier in the world. We have players from Russia, all different countries, Canada, you know, Sweden. It's not the players. The talent is there. The only thing that comes into the coaching is the systems. It's all system play. It's all who you're going to mix and match and who you're going to play with. That's where the coaching comes in. I think, actually, to be honest, I think the coaching is the most. I don't want to discredit the coaching, because I think coaching in the NHL is probably the most crucial sport out of any professional sport where the Absolutely. Coaching really comes into play. But no, these players are elite players. They need to come up. They need to play together. There's no chemistry. You look at the mistakes. Eddie Olczyk, when you're watching a Blackhawks game, he's always – this is what I love about him being a commentator, is he's always drawing plays up for the kids out there that
he's
are watching.
He's like, all the young hockey players out there.
The young hockey players always drawing up plays and showing. And there's so many minor mistakes that I learned even when I was like 13, 14 years old playing that these guys are playing out there. So I don't know if that's necessarily coaching or if these players should know where to be. It's position, you know, players that just need to know where to be on the ice. And, you know, we talked about last time we were on the show, we had Nick Kampara on last time we talked about Blackhawk hockey, and he was bringing up our goalie situation and our defense situation. Now, I know if you have a weak defenseman core, I know it's going to be you're going to have a lot of struggles on you know, your goalies or whatever, because you're going to be facing a lot of shots. But we look at these last couple games here. The Jets put up 5 against us. The Oilers put up 5. The Canucks put up 3. Even the Flames, even though we beat them 8-4, they put up 4 goals. The Jets put up 3. And now the Rangers just put up 6.
And 5 of those were in the third period.
Exactly. And so the thing is, we're giving up a lot of goals. I mean, we're still putting up even in those games. Blackhawks put up 3. They put up 2 against the Jets. They put up, like I said, 8 against the Flames. They dropped a goose egg against the Canucks. But the thing is, our offense is there. It's there. It's just the goaltending I don't think is the best it could be, and I think the defensive core is just not solid enough to get it done.
And this is like I love how you touch on the defense and the goaltending, and this is the biggest thing. See, when we look at the offense, we look at Toews, Kane, Strome, DeBrincat. You know, there's going to be guys that are going to have off years. DeBrincat had a 40 goal season last year, and then this year it doesn't even have 15. So this is the problem. When we don't get lines, the second, third, or fourth line, and we don't get those guys scoring, there's nothing's going to happen. And then the defense and the goaltending, Robin Leonard, you know, allows, you know, 3-4 goals in the third period, and we don't stand a chance.
Yeah, and I think even with the goaltending, that's something we have to get assessed, because everyone's thinking with Corey Crawford and Robin Leonard. I think when Nick was on, he was saying that, you know, they're the top goaltending
tandem,
dude.
Yeah,
tandem doing the league, which I don't think so. I mean, they're struggling a little bit, my goodness, and they're trying to help their team out. So the goaltending is, I think, what they need to think about. But then we've seen, as you touched on, you know, with the defense, Brent Seabrook's out for the rest of the season. We still have Duncan Keith, an experienced defenseman, but, you know, with those guys, you know, they've played a lot of professional hockey. You know, there's going to come a time, you know, when they want to hang up the skates, and that's when we're going to have to start relying on those young guys like Kirby Dach and Dominic Kubalik.
And, Anthony, you touched a little bit on the goaltending situation, and we've had guys come on the show and talk about what they think is the big situation for the goaltending. Personally, I think whatever's going to be the cheapest option that lets us keep some of these UFAs that we've got coming up, like Kubalik, Strome, guys like that. But
yeah,
Scott, I know what you think about it.
Forwards are a dime a dozen.
Listen to me, Scotty. I want to know what Joe thought about it, because Joe is one of the biggest Hawks fans in the office, and so I've heard everybody and their mom's opinion on this, and I just want to know where you stand, goalies versus forwards, who we should pay in the offseason.
Here's the thing. without a good goaltender, you don't have a team.
There you go.
And
there you go.
And for me, I'm going to pick goaltenders because, you know, we need a good goaltender. Like we have a good goaltending crew. I think Robin Lehner and Corey Crawford are good goalies. I mean,
that's where I disagree again. Robert Lehner, yes.
I understand.
And he's got the age. Yes. Going against him. Corey Crawford is done.
And we got a good goaltending coach, I think. Stephon White.
Absolutely. But Corey Crawford is done.
But here's the thing.
Sign Lehner. Signed another veteran guy. Or no, I'm serious. And this is something that I have been going strong with this since day one. Everyone's like, oh, the goaltending's fine. I was called the meatball marinara on Twitter. You know, everyone's shooting tweets at me and telling me I don't know what I'm talking about. Listen, I'm not saying that Robert Lehner isn't an extreme talent. I think he's very talented. But if you look at his stats and you look at his career stats, he is not anything to write home about. He's had like one or two good seasons. That's it. I don't think he deserves a max contract. He does not. So when you talk about the goalie tandem and you talk about these forwards are a dime a dozen. They are. We have a solid forward crew. We just drafted Kirby Dach, which I think he's going to pan out to be solid. There was a couple defensemen in that draft I would have went with if it was my opinion, or I would have went with Turcotte, you know, the hometown kid.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you need a solid goaltender. And even from experience of playing the game of hockey, I've been on teams where we have had unbelievable forwards. We've had unbelievable defensemen who have gone on and played in college and gone on and played, you know, junior hockey. And we've struggled throughout the season because we didn't have goaltending. And we've won multiple state championships because we had goaltenders that stood on their head. So with the question about do you need a solid goaltender, I think it starts from the back end and then to the front. I think you need a solid goaltender. That's your main priority. And then I think you need defensemen. And then the forwards just trickle in.
You know, Scott, I don't know if you're just saying this because, you know, Robin Lehner let up 5 goals in the last, you know,
no,
last
no, year. I've been saying this all year.
And I'm totally kidding you. But I do understand what you're saying. No team is going to get anywhere without a goaltender, and I believe that for as long as I guess I live, because you're not going to go anywhere without a goaltender. And with the forwards, we got forwards. We got Strome's good. Taze, you know, Taze is center, but still, like Kane, Taze, all these guys. And I personally think we can get a good team. You know, we can get a good team. There's different parts in the Blackhawks where we're not fitting defense. We're lacking defense and goaltending. You know, I don't know what's going to be like in 2-3 years. What's the Blackhawks going to be like in 2-3 years down the road? What are they going to be back in the playoffs? How many years?
Well, I think that's the big question that I really want to ask you is, now that we have the trade block coming up, we have the trade deadline coming, you know, it's on Monday.
Yeah.
Do we stack our team? We're 26-26.
Yeah.
We're last place in the division.
Yeah.
There is still a chance that we can make the playoffs, but do you think that we should just give up on the year, trade the players away with the big contracts that maybe someone will take, someone that's making a playoff push and making a Stanley Cup run, that they can pick up guys like this? We've seen this a lot. Do you think it's time to jump ship? Because we haven't made the playoffs in, what was it, two, 3 years? Two years? So, and we're not going to make it this year, so that's going to be another year that
not
we are,
gonna make it.
Are not. So next year, the thing is, if you're trying to rebuild, you have to do it now. Yeah. I think what the Hawks have been doing is they don't want to rebuild because they've had such a long stretch of being so dominant in the NHL that I think if you have – it's been a struggle. These last 3 years have definitely been a struggle. I think it's time to start to rebuild. And I've been saying that. I said that since on our first show of this first semester of our school year here. I said I think it's time to get rid of some of your big-name players, and I got a lot of hate for it. Everyone's like, oh, you know, you can't do that. These are guys that are going to, you know, retire here and everything. That's fine. But there's going to be
– Let me just bring up the fact that Scott got called both a meatball marinara and a pigeon.
And a pigeon,
On Twitter. I
think there was one more. It was a meatball marinara.
Let me see. I pulled him up.
And there was one more. I loved it.
Yeah, he said it was brutal that you pulled the hockey card.
Yeah, that was another one.
He said, at least do a little homework first, Jesus. Scotty got absolutely torn up on Twitter last time.
I thought it was great.
Scotty's big comeback was, I think he played a little too much NHL.
I think so, because Robert Lehner's ranked, I think he's like rated like an 85 in NHL. So I think he saw that and he was like, yeah, Robert Lehner. But the thing is, when you look at his stats, which I pulled up, by the way, his best career that he's had, wait, let's look at the games that he's played. In 2017-18, he was 14-26. The year before that, he was 23-26. The year before that, he was 5-9. He was 9-12 before that, 12-5 before that. So that's a good strand of four or five years.
Yeah.
And then you pull up his 2018-2019, where it was like his unbelievable season.
Best in the final.
He was 25-13. 25-13, and now this year, 2019-2020, he's 16-10. So I get he's a talent. He's gotten some awards and achievements, but he has not earned a max contract, and I will stand by that. The stats don't lie.
And let me ask you a question here. And if in the trade deadline, if a goaltender's going, who's it being? Corey Crawford.
Well, no one's going to want him.
Or do you draft one?
Yeah, no. Well, you got to see what draft pick you
get. Does Robin Leonard want to stay around
for a rebuild? The NHL draft is not like the NHL draft is not like the NFL draft. So it's not like you can really build off the draft. If you really look at the draft picks, it's like the top three.
Yeah, and then the rest of them, they either, you know, stay in the Canadian Hockey League or they play, you know, collegiate hockey so that they can, you know, improve. But we are running just a bit short on time, but that'll just about wrap it up for our Hawk Talk here. When we come back, it'll be the best segment in sports talk radio. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Going up, coming down.
It's the three up, three down.
Three up, three down.
Only on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. We got the three up, three down. So for those of you that don't know how it works, we pick six men's college basketball games. Three of them got to be favorites. Three of them got to be underdogs. One favorite over 80 and one Missouri Valley Conference game. And before we get started, let's take a look at the standings.
Let's take a look at the standings.
I would love just pour it in.
At the bottom of the standings is our guest, 11-13.
Typical.
Then we got our man Scott.
Love it.
He is 12-18.
Typical.
Start from the
bottom. Six games under 500.
Start from the bottom.
Then next is Joey. He is 16-14.
Yeah, I know.
Faculty advisor Steve Cease, 20-10, consistently going 4-2. And then I am still up at the top, 21-9.
Hey, that's Freddie. That's only a one goal or a one game lead over Steve. Hey, and that's only a five game lead over me. So you go 1-5. I'm going 5-1. We're even.
Yeah, it is going to be close. I say we got a few, you know, college basketball guys left. I think the top three
is going to be really close, and I think Scott's just going to try to stave off because the guest missed a week. So right now, the guest is actually statistically better if we're going by win percentage. Scott has one more win.
I'm picking harder teams, which means my RPI is out the roof.
Scott, RPI does not apply in three up, three down. Scott was spewing this garbage. He's like, oh my God! All right, let's get it going.
Yeah,
let's
get started.
We're almost running
out of time. My first pick. We'll start with the ups. I'm taking Auburn over Tennessee, 78.3%.
I'm gonna go with the exact same pick. I have Auburn over Tennessee as well, 77.2%.
I'm gonna go with Iowa State. They are hosting TCU. They're at 76.2%, and that feels like a good game to me. I'm a good old Iowa boy at heart, so going with the Cyclones on that one.
I got Utah over UCLA at 64.5%. So, looking for a Utah win.
Steve Cease's first up pick is Wright State over Youngstown State at 71%.
That's a yawner right there. That's who cares.
My second up pick is my over 80. It is Louisville over UNC, 89.8%.
Okay, we're going to go over 80s. Let me give you you might as well just give it to me right now.
Not
Gonzaga
right.
Over San Francisco, 96%. Chalk it up as a W, baby.
Scott sounds a little confident for a guy four games under 500, but I'll give you all my over 80. I got Arizona. They're hosting Oregon State. That's a 92.6%. Arizona's been absolutely lethal this year. I don't see any way they lose that game.
All righty. I think this is going to be a big win. I got Arizona. This is my over 80 pick. Arizona over Oregon State, 92.6%. That's a win in the column.
Steve Cease, his over 80 pick. It's an over 90 pick at 97.6%. Got to go with the toothpaste Colgate over Holy Cross. My final up pick is we're going in the Valley. Indiana State over Evansville, 74.9%.
We're going to go to the Missouri Valley Conference as well. I have Bradley over Valparaiso. That game's at 55.4%.
I really want to change my Missouri Valley pick because it's the same as Scott's. But
I don't have time.
I guess I'm going 5-1, not 6-0 this week. But I also have Bradley. They're going to Valpo, 55.4%. That seems low to me. Valpo is not good. Bradley is good. So we're going to go Bradley all the way on that one.
And my last up pick, I got Oregon over Arizona State, 55.2%.
Steve's last pick is Bowling Green over Ohio, 62.9%. Now let's get ourselves some underdogs. My first one, going a little Pac-12 action, Stanford over Washington, 42%.
My first down pick is going to be Arizona State over Oregon. That game's at 44.3%.
My first down, I'm going to the Ivies, something I could never do coming out of high school. But we've got Brown at Columbia, 46.9%. I've got a buddy who goes to Brown, so let's go Bears.
And I got Stanford over Washington, my first down pick at 42%.
Oof. Steve's first pick, Georgia State over UT Arlington, and it was a 57.1% favorite for that favorite. My second one, Maryland over Ohio State in the Big Ten, 34.7%, and Maryland's ranked.
And this one is gonna get me, 17.4%.
Jeez.
17.4%, but you know what? You want to know why? A biased pick here. USC, Pac-12, one of my two favorite schools, over Colorado, like I said, 17.4%. It's going to be a close one. I'm riding with the Trojans, baby. I'm riding with them.
All right, well, my second down pick is going to be Kansas, number 3 Kansas. They're going to Waco to take on the Baylor Bears. They're at a 45.1, and I don't really care who wins that game. That's going to be a great game. That's two great teams. They've both been tearing it up this year, so I'm just excited to watch it at this point. I don't really care who comes on top, but a Kansas win would be nice, put me a little closer to Steve in second place.
And for my second down pick, I got Eastern Illinois over Murray State at 34.3%.
Steve's second pick is Arizona State over Oregon. Oregon is a 55% favorite.
I think that might be the first of Steve's pick where I can name one player on both teams.
Last down pick, going in the Big 12, Texas over Kansas State, 40.4%.
My last down pick is a gimme. It's right on the borderline, 49.6%. I have Marquette over Providence.
Yeah, that's a good pick, Scotty.
Very good pick.
I like that one. I like that one. Joe Smearman's got a Marquette.
He's liking that one.
My last down pick is going to be a good one. I like it. I got Penn State. They're heading into the land of the Hoosiers, Indiana University, 49%. So hopefully Penn State can pull it out. They're ranked. IU's not. So I know it's hard to go into IU and win, but I'm feeling good about it.
And for my final down pick, you guys might laugh at this, Evansville over SIU at 13.8%.
Wow.
That's bold.
That's bold.
You know what? It's bold, but I just want to say
17.4%. And then Steve's last pick, he is going Loyola over Missouri State. That's almost a 50-50 game, but that'll just about wrap it up here for this week's edition of the Red Zone. Big thank you to our news and sports guest, Joe Smearman, for being on the show with us talking about the Blackhawks. Also, a big thank you to Joel Dernford from Redbird Men's Golf, talk about his success and his home in Australia.
Great interview. He's always so much fun to have on the show. Hopefully, we can have him back around conference tournament time. Just a huge shout out to him again.
And if you missed any portion of tonight's show, the podcast will be available online at ZN. D, our question of the week is, what do you think the Hawks are going to do at the trade deadline? For Joey Dwyer and Scott Rosala, I am Anthony Ferretti. You've been listening to The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6. Right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.